A sense of urgency can be a good thing until it causes us to panic or make rash decisions. There's enormous pressure on teachers and administrators to solve disciplinary problems and immediately hand out consequences. Let's talk about a way to reframe this thinking with a few tips to be more successful in reducing bias and considering all perspectives next time you get into those discipline dilemmas. Welcome to Discipline Win, a podcast on how to win in discipline, both within ourselves and when helping others. Join me, Dr. Andy Jacks, as I dive into some of the most challenging issues in school improvement, specifically how we can help our most struggling students find their path to progress and give every single one of them a chance at their own success. Welcome back to Discipline Win. I really appreciate your dedication, and if you're here, that means a couple things. It means, one, that you truly care about kids because you want to improve yourself to do the very best you can for your students. And two, it means that discipline is an issue in your school or in your classroom. And of course it is, because it is in mine too, and everywhere around this world. It is a very tough issue. That's why I devote so much of my time and energy to help train first myself and those around me to be better in this issue. This is my first podcast episode after my new book, Discipline Win, Strategies to Improve Behavior, Increase Ownership, and Give Every Student a Chance. It is now out. Go check it out, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere you can go find it. It's a great book. I think, of course, I'm biased, but I think it's important to have a resource on this really tough issue. And there's a lot of other good resources out there. This is just one more ingredient into your cooking recipe on how to be successful in your school. So check it out. Let me know if you have any questions as you go through it. This episode is titled, What's the Hurry? How recently have you checked your discipline speedometer? And it aligns to chapter 3 in the book, because Chapter 3 is about aligning discipline with long-term goals. We're going to dive into that a little bit, but really this is its own sort of piece of information, its own section beyond the book. I tried to align the podcast and the resources available and resources online, but ultimately each one of them has a different take on the same issue. So in this case, I really thought about a situation recently where someone was asking really quick advice. They wanted it as the end of the school day. They're trying to dig into an issue with a parent and a student. The parents want to know exactly what was going on, what the consequence is going to be. The educator, or in this case, the administrator, barely had enough time to even understand the issue. And then they're asking, okay, what can the consequence be so I can give them to him right away and get this done? And there's a lot of pressure. Ah, what do I do? And I thought, the first thing I thought of, well, what's the hurry? Like, why are you in such a hurry that you feel that you have to give all this really important information? Like, if you're going to get 5 days suspension out of school, first of all, I can get into suspension in a minute. But if you're thinking about doing something like that, there is no chance that you truly need this level of hurry, this level of panic, this level of, if I don't do it now, what's going to happen? Oh, no. There's only a few times that we really have to have that level of urgency. When things get traumatically scary in schools, when you're talking about serious violence, drugs, weapons, those kinds of things, but 90% of what we do has nothing to do with that. Even on those issues, we can remove a school temporarily, we can move a student from school temporarily until we figure it out. But to think that you have to give the full answer of consequences or next steps immediately, it's just, one, it's inappropriate, and two, it's not fair to you, whether you're a teacher or administrator. It's just not fair. You're allowed to take your time and have more of a process. And I think we need to, because like in the analogy in the blog that goes along with this, if we're checking our discipline speedometer, we're keeping ourselves at a constant rate of moving forward without being reckless, going too fast, without going too slow and have people honking at us all mad. And I think it's a good analogy out there, because that's sort of how it is for us. If we go too slow, parents get mad, teachers get mad, colleagues get mad, everyone's mad at us. And they're right. If we're too slow, we're holding up the process. And we need to make sure we do this so that we can give a sense of urgency, make sure school is safe. But if we go too fast and we get reckless, we may end up in a ditch. We may get a speeding ticket from the police or from our boss or from the law or whatever if we're doing things the wrong way. So it's important to be more like the tortoise instead of the hare. Be methodical, be consistent, keep moving forward, but don't go so fast that you become erratic and inconsistent and reckless. So there's a couple big tips when dealing with discipline and trying to slow down. Because at the end of the day, it's about what can we do next? We know it's an issue. There's a lot of pressure to make us go fast. So how do we reduce that pressure and feel comfortable in the process? One, first things in first, is we have to remember that who we're dealing with, no matter what they did, the child is not bad. They may have done bad things, but they themselves are not bad. We have to remember that at the end of the day, we want to make sure that everyone involved is invested in the process and feels that what we did was fair with them, not to them, so that at the end of this, we're all together still. If you can really make this happen right, even if you had consequences, there should still be a sense of, yes, I have a consequence, but I know that person cares about me. So that's paramount to this whole thing. Discipline should be about helping kids stay in school and not automatically excluding them out of school. Traditional discipline is about this exclusion immediately. This sense of, they did something wrong, kick them out. That's not what we're about. They're not part of us. But that is such a fatal flaw because it immediately shows the student that you don't care about them. That, well, it shows them that you care about them until they do one little mistake and then you don't care about them anymore. And you may say you still care about them, but your actions speak louder than your words. And your reactions to discipline speaks volumes on how you truly want them to be in your school or not. There's been moments in my own story of being an administrator and educator where I just had this sort of like a slap in the face. I've had literal slaps in the face before too, but these are some of those more philosophical slaps in the face that are just, that get your attention and they're right and makes you think a little bit differently. That we don't need to automatically push kids away. In some ways it seems harder keeping them in school, but I would argue that it's easier in the long run because what's really hard is when you get in fights with families and they get really mad at you and everybody's angry. And if you're more consistent and more methodical, then you just go about the process so much calmer and so much more efficiently and ultimately more effectively. Baby, we should take it slow, take it slow. Oh, oh. This time we'll take it slow, take it slow. So slow and steady wins the race. But what does that actually mean in a practical sense in schools? As outlined in our chapter 3 here, I think there's about 8 steps, like sort of an 8-step process to really break down how to make this a little bit slower, but a little bit ultimately more effective. And you have to be careful with the efficiency and effectiveness. Sometimes we're more worried about the efficiency, getting things done, getting them off our desks, getting them out of our office, making sure that we people think that we're on top of things. But the problem is that may be efficient in the moment, or I'm sorry, effective in the moment, but in the long run, it's only efficient and not effective because in the long run, these misbehaviors keep continuing because what you really did was just sort of deal with the issue in the moment and not really deal with the overall root cause of the issue. So there's 8 steps in this process. I think one, we need to learn about the situation and learn about all the facts involved. We need to talk to number 2, the teachers. We have to really listen to them and understand what they think happened. Their perspective is essential. And we have to understand if they saw something happen or if they just heard about something happening. That's a critical factor. But we can't stop there. So many times, teacher comes to us, if you're an administrator, they tell you what's going on, and then you deal out punishment or you deal out consequences. Well, we have to keep going. We can't stop there. Number 3, we got to talk to students. Talk to all the students involved. The alleged perpetrator, the victim, the witnesses, anybody we can talk to that gives us more perspective on this issue. Then number 4, we need to communicate with the parents. Talk to both sides of the parents. I think that's critical. You can't just talk to the victim's parents. You have to talk to alleged perpetrator's parents. And I even hate using the word perpetrator, but it sort of helps identify what we're talking about as far as situation. So the alleged perpetrator's parents we often avoid until we've made the decision on consequences. I think one of the most effective things that have helped me over the years is to talk to the alleged perpetrator's parents before you even get into the world of thinking about what next steps are. Because it shows you that you cared about them enough to talk to them and to get their input before you start doling out punishments or consequences or next steps or anything like that. That's a critical step. It really helps you along the way. Number 5, I think it's important to get into detail. Don't be vague about what happened. Be very, very specific. What was done by the student? When was it done? Where was it done? Because a lot of times, once we get into real details, it's like we get in those aha moments. We're like, wait, that's what happened? Oh, you're telling me, oh, that's what happened. Sometimes we learn things that we didn't really understand altogether once we get in those details. Number six, review. Review everything. Put it all together. As I said earlier, I think a summary is important. Writing a summary about what happened helps us to synthesize that information. And then number seven, decide. Decide what is the appropriate disciplinary next step. Sometimes you have to do a consequence based on certain things in your code of behavior, but a lot of times you don't. And frankly, I think there's sometimes we need to push back on our code of behavior if they tell us to do any of these natural and automatic consequences that are zero tolerance and based on a tradition of shame and exclusion in our schools. We have to analyze the situation, understand who's involved, what they want to do, what their perspectives are, because there's been plenty of times where I'm working with a family and they are fully on board with trying to help the situation. I don't do any consequence. I may not do anything, because you got to remember, a consequence is all sorts of different things. When you talk to a student individually and reprimand them, that's a consequence. When you talk to the parents and talk about that situation, about how that needs to change, that's a consequence. All of these things can be viewed as consequences, and so sometimes we just disregard those. But the reality is, it gets them, you know, gets their attention, and it helps them understand that these behaviors need to stop. And sometimes that's enough. Like, for instance, if you are sending home a discipline referral after you've talked to the student and the parent, that's like rubbing salt in the wounds. And you may say, well, you need documentation. For what? For what do you need documentation for? Because then you're just tracking the kid. Then you're doing something to the kid instead of for the kid. And that kind of stuff just breeds animosity, and it shows that you don't really trust the student or the parents to fix the situation. Number eight, last thing, is follow through. You get trust from follow through. You have to earn trust, and you have to earn the right to slow down in the future, because so many times we tell people one thing, but we do another. And I think that it is important to intentionally explain the process to parents and students as this misconduct occurs. Okay, here's what I'm gonna do, everybody. I have some misconduct. I know there's an issue. Let's talk about the process for this, because the process is important as the misconduct itself. And it sounds kind of weird. People need to know that you take it seriously and have a sense of urgency, but the process can show that just as much as your words do. So explain the process, help them understand that you do need time to treat everyone fairly and to ultimately resolve this issue. The more confidence you give with that family and all the families and the teachers and colleagues and everybody involved, the more they believe you. Be clear from the very beginning, though, that you don't accept bad behavior. Just because you're taking a little bit longer in the process, should it mean that we automatically just accept bad behavior? Far from it. The process is meant to eliminate or reduce bad behavior. So allow yourself to have more time. Ensure that people understand that more time does not mean that we're just blowing things off. But your follow through on the next steps is what's more important. Because when you take your time, you deal with it methodically, and then you actually eliminate the behavior or reduce the behavior, that's the trust at the end, not just the actual consequence. Oh, he took care of it because he gave a consequence. That's a very fleeting kind of a thing. Long-term change in behavior is what gains their trust, because they know if it comes to you, you're going to take care of it in the long run. That's when they have patience. And that's when they understand that, okay, what you say is true. It may not happen today, it may not happen tomorrow, but I know eventually you're going to take care of this thing. And that is such a confident feeling as an administrator, as a teacher, knowing that your families, your students, they trust you to deal with this issue in your own way. Because that's the biggest thing with this whole thing. But I want to, and I don't want to steal your freedom. I don't want to change your mind. I don't have to make you love me. I just want to take your time. I don't want to wreck your mind. Staying cool, calm, and collected matters tremendously in the world of discipline and how we react to misconduct. You have the power. You have control of yourself. And that's really about it. You don't have control of anybody else, but you can control what you do and how you respond. And even though they want to push you one way or make you do this or want you to do that, you are in control. If you're in the classroom, you're in control of how fast you redirect behavior. I'm not saying ignore things all the time. Sometimes it's appropriate to ignore misbehavior in the classroom. Most of the time, no. Most of the time, you have to have high expectations and not allow this misbehavior in the classroom. Nip it in the bud so that it doesn't continue. But do so with integrity and do so off the stage so that you keep that student and that strong relationship close to you. For administrator, we have to control the situation. And that doesn't mean that we're the boss. It means that we gain trust by helping them understand that a more systematic process reduces bias, it's more consistent, it's more fair, and ultimately the long goal is that we keep kids and families together because we are always more successful together. When we think long term, it gives us a much better perspective on these situations. If you go to the website andyjacks.com, there is a checklist, a reminder, a worksheet for how to go through disciplinary situations. Because I think it's important to actually have a check sheet that helps us to be more systematic on this. Otherwise, we just have our notes, we may get too rushed. So think about that checklist as a resource for you. Check that out. And the other thing is, ultimately, you can decide how you want to approach all these issues. Work with your team, come up with your own process, make sure that your teachers, your colleagues, your administrators, your parents, your students feel that it's a safe and effective process. We have to make sure that our schools feel safe as much as actually are safe. But we have to be careful because the more you just automatically give punishments out, research shows that that does not make our school feel safer. It actually makes our school feel less safe. Reacting with relationships, with love, with compassion, with remembering that kids aren't bad, even if they have bad behavior, that's the trick. Keep kids in school when dealing with discipline. Best of luck to you. I know you can do it. You care about kids, every single one of them. That's why you're here. That's why you're with me. We're in this together. Have a great weekend.